It's the Davos Showdown. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about the quote, Canada lives because of the U.S. Hmm. Can you guess who said that?
I've got three guesses.
I don't think you need three. Mm-hmm. The China pivot and the domestic blowback from that, which is an interesting topic. And then our old friend, Pierre Poilievre, and his political survival. We'll talk about all that kind of fun stuff in a couple of seconds. Does that sound good to you, Lisa?
I'm just so excited.
Welcome to Politics is Broken with Brittle Starr and Lisa B. Canadian and global politics unspun. Are you sitting comfortably? Good. Then we'll begin.
Hey there, welcome to Politics is Broken. My name is Brittle Starr.
My name is Lisa. Welcome.
Come on back. We're not going to prattle for very long. We've been told to be prattle a little too long.
I enjoy the prattle every now and then.
I like a good prattling every now and then.
Just two people talking, but we do.
Exactly. Just shooting the breeze, catching up.
Checking in on the world.
Nurturing our parasocial relationship.
That's right. That's right.
Which I guess is what you and I have, isn't it, really? Like, we have never met each other in person.
We haven't, but I feel like parasocial is more like people leaving comments and building a relationship that way. But we chat a lot.
I know, but I text you. I text your comments.
Yeah, but that's, you would text friends, right?
Yeah.
Okay. On that friend wagon anytime soon.
Friend seems like such a strong word.
Jackass. Okay.
So it was another busy week and in politics all around the world. And of course, the big news was that it was the World Economic Forum in Davos. I like the name Davos, by the way.
It sounds like strong.
It sounds like a location in a superhero movie.
Like,
you know,
under
what I mean?
The earth and
Yeah. Superman and Batman have gone back to Davos to regroup.
I feel like that's what the conservatives think the WEF is. It's like some underground layer of bad things happening.
It was interesting because I think this was the first time I've been aware of the World Economic Forum meeting before. But this seemed like the first year where I was like, wow, there's a lot of attention being put on the World Economic Forum in Davos. It was eating up a lot of media.
I think this is the first time in a long time where there's been a lot of reasons for it to be more public than usual.
Do you think that people were tuning in to see the wheels come off Trump?
I think people were tuning in just to see like how things would play out. Would there be a strong stance? Would people just let him prattle? But I think it's like that morbid curiosity of what's going to happen. Who's going to say something that's going to piss him off?
And it's so weird because we've talked about this before, and that it's really whoever has his ear last is in favor with him. But what I wasn't expecting, not really, was the strong stance and the reception to Prime Minister Carney's speech. It was quite something, wasn't it? Did you watch the whole thing?
I did watch the whole thing. And then after I read the transcript, because it's that we got to keep him guessing. And we've talked about this before, like there has to be some sort of other plan, right? Like the things that we see happening in real time where we feel like, hey, we should be taking a tougher position on this kind of thing. We were always hoping there was a plan in the background that Carney was working on, right?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I think his speech and the action that hopefully comes after the speech, I think that was the plan.
Heard that as well, that it's one thing, like some of the critics were saying Carney's speech, that it's one thing to say something, another thing to act on it. But I think, to his credit, saying those words in that arena is a pretty big action, pretty big swing. I think you made reference to the shopkeepers, the Havel literary reference, taking the world workers of the world unite sign out of the window because it was like, it was a lie and it was just all he was doing was appeasing the powers that be. And the first thing that struck me about that was the fact that for so long, it seems like certainly for the past 9 years, we have discounted intellect and intellectual things in favor of stupidity.
How do you really feel?
Dumbassness.
Dumbassery, yes.
It's it. I think it was the first time in a long time I thought, yeah, someone's doing an intellectual, this is a speech. This is what I want our leader to be doing, is to be, I want him to seem really smart. I want it to seem like I would be very uncomfortable in a conversation with him.
I think he is a great orator. The way that he presented the speech, the punctuality of certain things. I thought he did an amazing job. But I think sometimes in the responses to things that have happened around the world, like there has to be dumbassery because that is what you're dealing with. And to, I don't want to say to appease, but to go by what Carney said about what was it, the, like just basically rules of order of what we've been doing.
Oh, the rules-based order. You compared rules-based order to a pleasant fiction or a big lie that everyone pretended to believe out of fear.
Yes. I think you have to meet on that same level, which he's done. We saw him in the Oval Office, like trying to joke around with Trump while Trump was rubbing up on him and things like that. You have to meet who you're talking to, your audience.
Yeah.
But the audience in Davos is more high-end. Is more intellectual. And so I think it was the perfect venue to show it, that this is who Canada is.
That's interesting. Do you think that he was aware, do you think the PMO in general was aware that it was going to be heard to the scale it has been heard compared to speaking to the, just the people in the room? Do you know what I mean? Like you're saying, like it was intellectual because of a bunch of intellectual folk in a room. But do you think the Prime Minister's office was like, if we do this speech, it's going to be heard by the whole world?
I think anytime anyone's doing a public speech, I'm sure when you go out and you do your little tap dancing.
My works.
You hope it hits, right? Like you hope it hits. Yeah, for sure. But you're never going to know. I think, again, with all the foolishness that's happened in the last year, it was, as we've said about Carney, it's the right time.
Yeah, the right guy for the right time. Yeah, for sure.
And it was the right speech for the right time. And I think for... Because don't forget, we have the world leaders there, but the world leaders represent their people. Mm-hmm. And the speech wasn't just for them. It was for the people of all of those countries. And I think that's why it was so well received, because everybody is sitting on pins and needles going, what the hell do we do? And to have somebody be the first one to say it, I'm hoping starts the process of other people saying it.
Yeah, that was, it says here, Carney is rallying middle powers to unite. Is there actually an appetite for middle power bloc? Or is Canada just wandering into the woods with without our traditional allies? And I think it seems like from a number of things that people are relieved that someone spoke up eventually. Because I think for so long, it seemed to me that no one on the world stage, like Keir Starmer, for example, the Prime Minister of the UK, it seemed to be like, yeah, but this if we give him what he wants this time, maybe it'll be okay. But if we give him what he wants this time, maybe it'll be okay. And it's because this guy never dealt with an idiot before. It's not going to be okay.
And I think that is, if we want to really break down Carney's speech, that's what it's about. Just, we can't just rely on what was, because what was is no longer. And he made a quote in his speech about we can't mourn the past, right?
Yeah. And nostalgia is not a strategy. I thought, man, that's a banger of a...
Like, he had so many good lines in his speech. But I think that's what we've all been doing. We've been doing the yeah, but, right? For a year. But yeah, but we've done this before. Yeah, but we had a good relationship. It's not working, right? Like, Trump is Looney Tunes, as we saw after the speech.
Yeah.
And so I think this trying to appease the dark overlord because we think that it's going to make him happy... And if it makes him happy, then he won't be mean to us. It's not working. And we can't waste any more time on that. And I think that also is a key point in Carney's speech, is that for Canada, so middle powers need to start uniting. Middle powers need to start having conversations. Because if we're not at the table, we're on the menu.
I know.
Sam, that was a good one. Sorry.
Like, wow, I could see him heading towards that line, and I was like, he's going to use the "we're on the menu" line. He's going to use the "we're on the menu" line, and he did.
Yeah.
It was, to me, I didn't have a sense of patriotism. I guess I did, but that wasn't the overwhelming feeling out watching the speech and listening to the speech. It wasn't like, I'm so proud to be Canadian. It was just like, thank God someone in a position of power is stepping up to the plate here. This is craziness.
But didn't that make you proud, though?
It did, but it wasn't like an overwhelming sense of Canada.
Oh, Canada kind of thing.
It was more like, okay, people of the world, let's get our act together and do something about this, which was great.
And like, we've talked about this many times. Many people are talking about it. Maybe we don't articulate it as well as you did in a speech, but we've been saying this for so long. What are we going to do? someone needs to put their foot down and tell him no. And in the most highbrow way, that is what Carney did in the speech.
Yeah, for sure. And I think because what you have to realize is that the situation in the United States currently is untenable. It is the vast majority of Americans don't want Trump and his enablers in power, and they want him out. There's just not a lot of levers they can pull apart from very drastic, scary levers.
Yeah.
And I understand, as someone posted online a while ago saying, everyone wants a revolution, but no one wants to get shot.
Yeah.
It's, yeah, no guff. That's what I said to that. I responded, no guff.
You're so bad at
it. I did, exactly. It's an adult forum that can take that kind of stuff. But it's very true in the sense that it's untenable, and that the Americans, the vast majority of Americans, don't want this guy in power and just have to figure out their way, muddle their way through until they can find a way to get him out of power. And that might mean waiting until the midterms or whatever. Mm-hmm. But so saying, the rest of the world can't afford to just play along. Like, no. He's not our president. We don't have to.
He would like to be.
Yeah, exactly. It's not, we don't have to abide by what he's doing and with America. And I feel for the Americans, because you get the sentiment online on social media, a number of Americans who are exasperated.
Yeah.
Because they're tired of America getting kicked, rightfully kicked currently, I think, online in comments and stuff and commentary, because this happened twice. And it was some number like 90 million voters in America didn't vote last election. It was something crazy. And it was like, this, you've brought this on yourself. This is, and as a result, we go, it's like you've let the drunk driver behind the wheel and we're all trying to walk home safely. This is not good.
But it's, voter apathy is a thing regardless, but people don't understand and still view it as, it's just one vote. What does it matter? Blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. I didn't do this. I didn't vote for him. They don't understand that by not voting, you did in fact vote for whatever ends up being in power. And that applies to any democratic process, right?
Yeah.
And as we've talked about, it's when it starts to impact people and their community, is that when they're finally going to start questioning, oh no, what did we do?
Yeah, I think so. I think we've mentioned that as well. The Waffle House Index, as I'm calling it, not just weather, but I think it's the political temperature of America. It's going to be the case of when someone shows up to the Waffle House and it's closed or there's nobody working behind the counter. That's going to be like, oh, this is affecting me directly now. I probably should have done something about this ages ago. But politics, that's how politics works. It doesn't matter if it's not affecting you until it does.
Yeah.
And that's the part where you have to be more vigilant. You have to be more aware of what's happening. So the majority of people, it seems, certainly online, I've never seen so many people doing pro-Canada, pro-Prime Minister Carney posts on social media from all over the world since the speech. So it's been really great to see. Now, not everybody liked the speech.
I'm so surprised.
Howard Lutnick, who would be played in the biopic by Howard Hessman, an evil Howard Hessman.
Is Howard Hessman still alive?
No, he died, sadly. Okay. Such a good actor as well. I liked him a lot. Howard Lutnick didn't just call it political noise, though. On Bloomberg TV on Thursday, he said they have the second best deal in the world. They being Canada, meaning Canada.
Okay.
They have the second best deal in the world, referring to Kuzma. And all I got to do is listen to this guy whine and complain. Give me a break. And then basically went on to threaten. Say, do you really think that Trump's going to be happy about all this kind of stuff when it's time to renew? So it's a threat. Basically a threat. Like, he's going to be personally hurt.
Yeah.
And he's going to therefore retaliate in his own whatever way he deems he wants to. And I thought there's a little bit of, there's a couple of things that are happening here. One is, as I keep saying, the wheels are wobbly. Mm-hmm. It's an untenable situation in the U.S. because it's becoming, the lies are becoming more and more ridiculous. We used Trump's bruise on his hand, his left hand, after leaving Davos was quite pronounced. It's whatever. People get bruises for any reason, especially people in their late 70s.
Sure.
Whatever. Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
And Caroline Leavitt had said the bruise on his right hand is from shaking people's hands. It's evidently, seemingly from an IV. At least it's certain points in that direction that probably an IV.
I don't believe anything out of Carolyn Leavitt's mouth.
No.
So.
And then she said about his left hand, oh, he hit it on a table on the way out of some meeting or something.
Like an oopsie, or he was mad and slammed his hand down?
Like an oopsie. Oh. Like an oopsie.
Okay.
Caroline Leavitt is very good at her job. Her job, however, is not good for anybody.
No. That is the quote that should
be posted. That's the quote. She had responded, Libby Dean on X had posted, during Trump's WF remarks, he appeared to mix up Greenland and Iceland around three times. It was three or four times. And you can listen to the speech, and he does. First, I've read the transcripts. He refers to it as Iceland. Greenland is Iceland.
Can you imagine all the people in Iceland going, what?
What? Exactly. Jan Arden and her fiancé going,
right?
Oh my.
In their little hot bath things that
they
have in
Iceland. Yeah, I just found love.
I know, right? Yeah. What's happening? Thanks, Jan. You ruined it all.
Exactly. Brought attention to Iceland. Insensitive, if you ask me.
Don't do that when I'm drinking.
Sorry. So this Libby Dean had stated about Trump mixing up Greenland and Iceland around three times or so. Caroline Levitt retweeted this with, no, he didn't, Libby. His written remarks referred to Greenland as a piece of ice because that's what it is. You're the only one mixing anything up here. It was, I mean, that to me is what's untenable about it, because there's enough people that saw all they needed to see and heard him say these things. And
no,
someone
you didn't.
Says, no, you didn't. You're like, you're just crazy. But so it's untenable. And I also think this Lutnick saying they have to do the second best deal in the world in front of Kuzma. All I got to do is listen to this guy whine and complain. Give me a break. And then going on to talk about how Trump is going to, that's going to reflect poorly on their negotiations for Kuzma. It's buddy. The negotiations for Kuzma are a joke.
Yeah.
Why would we possibly believe anything that comes out of their mouths?
Like, he's saying it as if we don't know that if you displease the ogre, he's going to lash out. We've been dealing with this for a year. Carney said we were the first to get the sucker punch of, oh, by the way, we're coming to take you over. Lutnick reminds me of the douche in high school that, like, wrecked his knee and couldn't play football. Doesn't he just remind you of that guy?
He's got a real right-wing radio feel to him, as well, to me.
Yeah. He'll great to have a drink with. Yeah, we're well aware of how Trump is going to respond. And that has been what Trump has used for the last year, at least, probably his entire life, to push his agenda. And we've seen that with the tariffs. Yes, tariffs, no, tariffs, 100%, tariffs, 3%. Like, he responds out of emotion, which I find funny, right? DEI. And we're well aware. So, like, you're not saying anything we don't know, Lutnick. We just don't care anymore.
I think it's come to the point now where certainly Canada, and certainly with Carney's speech, it seems to be evident that he is on the right page, I think, with Trump currently, and hopefully for the long term. Mm-hmm. But I'm hoping that, and some of the other people, like with the Trump's Board of Peace, B-O-A-R-D, not B-O-R-E-D, maybe a bit of both. His crew that he got to sign on to the Board of Peace initially invited Carney, and Carney said, I'll think about it.
I'm washing my hair.
and then afterwards it was like, it's $1 billion per country that wants to be part of it. And then Carney said, I don't think we're going to do that anymore. I think that we're probably not going to do it. And then Trump posted on Truth Social this very hilarious post. Dear Prime Minister Carney, please let this letter, capitalized letter, serve to represent that the Board of Peace is withdrawing its invitation to you regarding Canada's joining what will be the most prestigious Board of Leaders. Is it Board of Peace or Board of Leaders? Ever assembled at any time. Thank you for attention to this matter. Donald J. Trump, President of the United States of America. And the best comment I heard about that, I don't know if you saw the clip of Trump signing this Board of Peace into action. If you saw the clip of that, him with a bunch, all the other leaders, or the Argentinian dude with the wild hair, all that kind of stuff. And James O'Brien from LBC said, I love this so much. He said, it's like the bar from Star Wars.
Oh, I get it now. I got the visual.
He didn't say canteen. And I think the word choice of bar just cheapened the whole scene just enough that it was made it. That's one of my favorite.
Was there music in the background? That weird music that they played?
Yeah, it was just craziness. But I think what I was starting to say is that I think the people are starting to realize now, and hopefully more countries are realizing it. And it seems to be with the Board of Peace that the people not joining it. There's no UK, there's no Mexico, the bigger players are not involved.
Yeah.
There's no France, there's no Germany. And I think people are starting to realize now that if you push back, he will retaliate. He will be hurt personally and doesn't want to lose, so he'll push back. If you appease him, he will take advantage of you.
100%.
And the pushback and the retaliation, rather, and the take advantage are the same thing. There's no difference. But there's no way to play this guy and think he's going to come to his senses. He's going to be rational about this. It's not going to happen.
I feel like we, and by we, every other country, needs to treat the presidency right now like an after-school special on bullying. Like a 80s, early 90s. After-school special on bullying.
Yeah.
And take lessons from those, because that is what has to be applied here.
Yeah.
That's it.
He's probably got a terrible upbringing. Probably always trying to appease his father.
Maybe.
His mother's Scottish accent in that The Apprentice movie was terrible. I probably heard him. Did you see that movie yet? Oh my God. No, you have to go see it. It is, if anyone who, and anyone listening as well and watching, go find The Apprentice. I think it's on one of the streamers for free now. And it is so good. And then when you watch it, you go, oh.
Okay.
It's a bit of a backstory to who he is as a person. But his mother is from Scotland, and the woman doing the Scottish accent of his mother in the movie is not very good at doing a Scottish accent.
They should have got your mama.
Little Bulgarian.
No.
And then, of course, Trump was, once he heard that, reacted to Carney's speech, he said, quote, Canada lives because of the United States. Remember that, Mark, next time you make your statements.
Did he say that about Switzerland, too? Sorry.
He accused Canada of getting a lot, quote, a lot of freebies and being ungrateful. This is not how things work. Do I think that Canada owes a lot to the U.S. for its national security? 1,000%. Absolutely. One of the biggest reasons that we haven't had any concerns is because we're next door to the biggest military force in the world. Definite benefit. Definite benefit. And we've got a great relationship, or had a great relationship with the United States. Therefore, if someone came looking to punch us up, they'd be like, wait a minute, we make a lot of money from those guys. Let's not let this happen.
Yeah, but also people like us. Who's coming to invade us except for the U.S.? Go ahead.
No, but true. And it's just, it exposed how shallow and how personal Trump takes these types of things. It is all about giving him a golden orb gift in exchange for what you want, because it makes him feel good. It's about giving him the FIFA Peace Prize, which I'm starting to doubt the credibility of, in exchange for, I don't know, not kidnapping the players of Argentina when they arrive, or Mexico, maybe.
Or allowing them in so that they can play. Yeah.
Exactly. So I'm hoping that we learn. Do you think they'll be a banding together, middle powers, like Carney rather said he was looking to create?
I think so. Just because of all the threats. Like, we look at what's happening within the walls of the U.S. and it's horrible and it's terrible and people are starting to realize and there's uprisings and all that. We can't do anything about that, right?
No.
But we can do things outside of those walls, especially with Greenland. That, I think, has really cemented what needs to happen and the coming together of nations to stand up to the giant toddler from the U.S.
And Carney seems pretty fired up. He's digging in his heels, which is good. I think he could have done that speech and could have gotten, if it was a tepid response from the international community, he might have been like, oh, I got to play my cards a bit better here. Mm-hmm. But there was such a positive response and a whole bunch of people going, oh, thank God somebody's finally said it, which is great.
Starmer started to speak up. It's like,
yeah, I know, you big wuss.
Little wuss boy.
Exactly. He's got great hair. You think that'd be enough?
Great. Okay, great. But do something for your country.
Yeah, you got the hair, man. That's just, let that lead the way.
Speaking of hair, did you see Trudeau speak?
I didn't see him speak. No.
I miss him. No, he was talking about, sorry, this is just a quick.
Yeah.
Prattle or whatever it is that we're doing. No, he was talking about the progress that Canada had made.
Right.
In relation to DEI.
Oh, yes, I did
right?
see that. I did see that.
Yeah. And it made me proud. Because when he's speaking, and he swore, which I...
Or just before you say it, I was just to let people know, he basically spoke on the fact that the success that Canada's had with DEI, essentially, mm-hmm. diversity, equity, and inclusion.
Yeah.
That idea of it's not a case of being like, there's nobody who is not a white male who can apply for this job, therefore we just had to hire a white male. He's like, go make sure that people know that who are not white males, that they can apply for this job. Mm-hmm. Doesn't mean you're going to get it just by not being a white male, but it means that you are going to be considered. You're going to be in the same game.
You shouldn't be overlooked because you're not a white male, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. And as he said, a really good example he said in that talk where he said, people say to men, you should run for office. And they go, finally, someone said this to me. Finally, someone's asked me. People ask women to run for office and they go, do you really think I'm ready? If that's the difference.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry.
Yes. Thank you. He too, when he's talking about something passionately that he believes in, great speaker, right?
Yeah.
We tend to have great speakers coming out of Canada, not everybody. But it just, when Carney related to the fact that we are one of the most educated countries, like we see that. Like I can see that.
Anyway, yeah, I felt patriotic at that line for
Did
sure.
You?
When
Carney
said that, I'm like, yeah, like, it's true. Even though I was kicked out of university, but I still feel like, you know.
But you got in.
I got into two universities. I only got kicked out of one. There you go. But Carney's all fired up afterwards, and he's had a caucus meeting in Quebec City, a retreat rather, and he responded to Trump's comment where Trump said Canada lives because of the United States. Carney responded, Canada does not live because of the United States. Canada thrives because we are Canadian.
Like just, he's just getting in those one-liners. I love it.
Yeah, it's so good.
Yeah.
It's so good.
And we need to remember that. We need to remember the can of soup, everybody.
I agree. I was thinking the other day that Canada gets overlooked because it seems like we're tiny compared to the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
We're 41 million people now, just under 41 million people now, I think, in total, compared to the U.S. is 360 or whatever it is, million people. So we are tiny in comparison to the U.S. However, I always think of the U.K., who is at about 60 million.
Mm-hmm.
So we are two-thirds the size of the U.K. I think it's just geography that makes us seem like we could be overlooked. I think that if the UK was neighbors to the US, the UK would be overlooked as well.
Oh, 100%. It's proximity too, right?
That's, yeah.
And that's why I think Canada needs to be concerned about the Greenland thing, because we don't want to be a sandwich. Do you know what I mean? We don't want to be in the middle of that sandwich if that were to happen. And so there's a lot of moving pieces to this that we need an awareness on. But first and foremost, that stand need to be taken to say that this is what we believe. This is what we believe our strengths to be. This is what we are doing to share those strengths with others. And he needed to hear that. We're not just sitting here waiting for something to happen. We can't do that anymore.
And speaking of, so Prime Minister Carney, of course, did a deal recently with China, which Trump approved, lauded, said it's a good thing he did. If you get a deal with China, you take it.
Yeah.
That means nothing, actually.
Yeah.
But the specific detail, we'll talk about the details of the China deal. It's going to allow 49,000 Chinese EVs per year at a preferential tariff of just 6.1%, which was the previous tariff was 100%.
Mm-hmm.
In exchange for China lifting restrictions on Canadian canola. So it's going to make a huge benefit to Saskatchewan.
The orders have already gone in.
Is that right? Happening.
Yep.
Yeah. Amazing.
Yep.
So that's good news. Do I think China is the best, most reliable trading partner in the world? No. Do I think that they'll at least pretend to be? Yes. I think the problem right now we have with the U.S. is that we can make a deal with the U.S. and they will just be like, nah, not doing it anymore.
But I think what we've had to learn from this whole thing is that you cannot rely blindly on any trade,
interaction. Like Mulder said.
So then if we go into negotiations, if we go into deals with that stance that we have to be cautious, optimistically cautious, but still cautious, then why not make a deal with China? Why not make deals with India, right? And I get it, espionage and all the stuff, which I'm sure you'll get to in a minute.
Yeah,
but
right
now I'm more worried about down south and the espionage and the political interference than I am about India and China.
As you were saying, Doug Ford, Premier of Ontario, of course, everyone knows that.
Doug
is calling for a total boycott of, quote, Chinese spy cars.
Your gadget in your brain when you hear that.
I get it. I understand this because I think someone floated the idea that the fighter jets we'd be buying from the U.S. might have kill switches in them. I think mainly someone floating that idea was Trump, who actually said, maybe we don't build them as good for other countries. Who literally said words to that effect.
Yeah.
So that's a concern. that's a concern there for sure. And as exactly you said, if we're getting in the current situation with the U.S., well, phones, oh my God. But in the current situation with the U.S., if we're buying a car from the U.S., there's just as much likelihood they are going to install kill switches or tracking devices in our cars currently as there is for China to do that. Plus, as you held up your phone there, for people not watching, everyone's got a phone. And every phone is a hotline to China.
Right? Yep.
And so don't worry about it.
Like, how many times have we been told, cover your cameras on your laptop, your Googles are listening? We know that is unfortunately what comes with invention.
Yeah.
Right? It's AI. That's terrifying. Yeah. It's part of the invention. I just think about all the turmoil and the ruckus about TikTok and, oh my God, and Chinese owned and espionage and all this other kind of stuff. I'm far more worried, and I know we're going to appear on one of them, about Meta. I'm far more worried about X and Grok doing shady shit.
Yeah, 100%.
So as we've had to change our perspective and opinion on our relationships with the U.S., as we should also change our perspectives and opinions on trade issues and relations with other countries. Maybe in 30 years from now, the U.S. will be our China. You know what I mean? The world is not the same. We can't just go with whatever's happened in the past is going to continue. It's just not.
It's not a strategy.
Thank you, sir. But if we do it cautiously, the thing with Ford that bothers me is he did the exact same thing that we've just been talking about, is that he doesn't want these EVs, sure, primarily for industry in Ontario. But we can work with that, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But he said it out loud. It's going to piss off the United States. It's going to piss off Donald Trump.
Yeah.
Good. Let it.
Yeah. As we said, you're going to piss him off, and the retaliation is the same as the taking advantage of that he'll do if you try to appease him. So.
My favorite was, you're not going to be able to go down to the States in those Chinese EVs. Good.
That's fine.
Put that in your ad.
Exactly. Car shuts off at border.
Self-driving car turns around at border. By the way,
Dougo.
You
the last 100 kilometers. Are you sure? You really want to?
Starts
Why?
To flash. Yeah, Doug, the bid vehicles are in the United States. There's whole businesses, like shuttle businesses, that use those bid vehicles. So, like, you're concerned about the U.S.? Shut up.
Yeah, and I totally understand Doug Ford wanting to protect the auto workers and the auto industry in Ontario. 1,000%. I completely understand that. However, I think that as sad as it may be, we are so integrated with the U.S. and the U.S. is so unreliable currently that the automotive industry is in tremendous trouble already.
Mm-hmm.
Building on sand. It's now that may change entirely in a year, 3 years, five years. Who knows? It might change entirely and go
Depending
back to the way it was.
If there's an election, yeah.
If there's an election, exactly. But even just that will change again. And people will go, God, you guys are right next door. We used to do so much good stuff together. We should do stuff together. It seems to make... As someone said ages ago during the beginning of the tariffs, Canada and the U.S. don't sell stuff to each other. We make things together.
Mm-hmm.
And it's true. I think cars are a really good example. There's 14 points they crossed the border in the process of making some cars and stuff.
Yeah.
And it has been a wonderful relationship that we've had with the United States for so long in the automotive industry. However, that seems apparently not great anymore.
No.
Because they don't want to have, they don't, as Trump has said repeatedly, we don't need cars from Canada.
We don't need them. We can build them ourselves.
Yeah. Okay.
Do it.
Yeah. I think that's just it. So I'm hoping to see with these Chinese EVs, I'm hoping to see some industry being brought into Canada and some jobs being created. Because that's the big thing, of course, is that there's people who are Flavio Volpe, as we talked about before. Flavio's a good dude. Framing this as a direct threat to workers, stating that 50,000 cars represents one full shift at an auto plant or roughly 1,000 direct jobs and 5,000 supplier jobs being handed to China. So that's a lot. So 49,000 cars isn't a lot of cars, but when you see it in those terms, it's like, that's a lot of people that are going to be affected by this for sure. My argument back to that would be, I think those jobs are in jeopardy anyway.
1,000%. 1,000%.
And I hate that, but I think it's the way it is.
But that's the evolution of what we're dealing with, right? Again,
yeah.
The things that we've known in the past are no longer the things that we can count on. But maybe, and I read somewhere, part of the deal is once they see how these cars are selling, that maybe now we have plants in Canada. Yeah. Right? That could be something that evolves the auto industry. It doesn't need to be a bad thing. There are already cars that come from China, right? It's not new, but I don't like, again, I understand the concern for workers. I'm very pro-worker. What? But sometimes, I know, sometimes workers, it needs to evolve.
Yeah, it right? has to. It has
and
to.
There's going to be bumpy patches in that evolution. But as long as there's an awareness of that this has to happen. And also, Doug Ford, do not talk about, I'm going to be in contact with Unifor and stuff like that. You don't give a shit about unions, okay? You're just trying to stomp your feet.
Yeah, yeah. It's, yeah, no, you're right. Things have to change all the time. Yeah. And they have to adapt. And it has to be for the benefit of as many people, many of us as possible. Mm-hmm. It's always for the greater good. That's very true. Now, what's interesting is we've got this weird line that Carney's drawing, they're trying to balance, rather, between, as he said in his own words, we aim to be principled and pragmatic. And part of that pragmatism, of course, means that there's a lot of public service workers who are about to lose their jobs. 1,775 layoff notices were sent out. Hardest hit public services and procurement, Canada, 730 notices. And Statistics Canada, 350 notices, which is cruel that we've got the stats on that. But
watching, it was a deep sigh.
Yeah. But yeah, so I mean, I think one of the things we have to remember is that there's a lot of patriotism in the idea of being like, oh, we'll be fine. Don't worry about it. You don't need cars from Canada. Go ahead. We'll get cars from China. We'll make cars with China. There's going to be a lot of not awesome stuff. Mm-hmm. And as we head further into a potentially intensifying trade war, if Kuzma starts to be talked about again, it's just a joke anyway at this point, but it'll still have real world implications, which is terrifying, which is scary. Let's talk about happier news.
Can I just say, because I don't, like, again, I'm pro-worker, and any loss of job is a horrible thing.
Sure.
It would have been more if it had been Polyev.
Speaking of Polyev.
Oh, look at that.
A new Abacus data poll released in January 22 shows Pierre Polyev's negatives at a record high of 48%. His net favorability is now negative 13.
That sounds about right. He's a negative odd number. That's
his negatives, negatives are the highest in Quebec at minus 39 and among women at minus 23. He's got his leadership review coming up real soon. Mm-hmm. He's been, as you made mention in some of your posts on Instagram and TikTok, that he's campaigning. He's trying to win support. I think, again, come on, guys. Seriously, you guys were up so far. It was a shoo-in. It was so far ahead in the polls. It was a given that he was going to be prime minister and the Conservatives were going to be the governing party in Canada. It was a given to the point where I had dealt with it. I thought, okay, how can I process this? I'll be fine.
I'll have more material.
I may have more money. You never know. But it would have been, I went through all the processes of grieving. Seven stages of grief. And then
acceptance.
We come into the election and he is just blown out. Not just blown out in the government. He's a good dude and we should keep him in. He just didn't get enough votes across the country. No, his own seat. His own riding said, you know what, guy? I don't think this is the gig for you. No. I don't think this is really great for you. Maybe you should do something else.
We tried you for 20 years. Yeah. We want something
exactly.
new.
And then you get to the leadership review. And there's serious comments being floated as I know that we lost the last election. We just have to determine if that had something to do with the leader or not. I don't think you should have the same leader.
It's the weirdest thing to me because this campaigning, what new thing can you, like, what are you campaigning with?
He
what
smiles is your now.
He
smiles and he's almost self-aware. The 22-minute sketch was great.
Yeah, okay, fine. I'll give him that. But then that tells me, like, I don't know, was the sketch the act or was his everyday persona the act?
I don't know.
That's the thing. If I don't know what's real and what's not real, like, that's a problem. As a human being, that's a problem.
I know. I don't like personal attacks on politicians, because I think it's just, it doesn't speak necessarily to their ability to do the job. I don't feel confident in Pierre Poilievre's ability to do the job.
No.
And I've got lots of other reasons to maybe not like him personally as a person, meaning not personally, like I've never interacted with the dude in my life. And that's fine.
But he's not a guy you would go for drinks with, right? Like,
no,
that's...
I'd be like, I don't think we're going to get along.
Yeah.
You're not really in my speed. And some of the stuff you're saying is a little bit sketch. Yeah. So we're not going to be good buddies. But I judge him purely on the ability to do his job. And I think to myself, he's a great attack dog because he's relentless. In the same way, he's very good at his job as Caroline Levitt's good at her job. Very good at their jobs. Their jobs just aren't very good.
Not good for anybody else.
Good for anybody else. Exactly.
Yeah.
So I think that, if Poilievre survives a leadership review, I think there are huge critical thinking problems in the Conservative Party of Canada. Part of me that wants him to win. Wants him to win.
I was just going to say, I hope he is successful in his leadership review.
Yeah.
You take that for what it's worth, people, and you interpret it accordingly. But
I think he's a gift to Mark Carney.
Yeah. Yeah. He's a pain in the ass, right? Like, he really is.
And, oh, for sure.
And Parliament becomes a joke with all the grandstanding and stuff like that. But, like, I don't foresee anything changing if he remains leader that in a next election would change the outcome that we currently have. Like, I don't think anything can happen that is going to make the majority of voters who vote for the Conservatives.
No, I think barring a terrible scandal involving Mark Carney.
They've tried that. They've pulled at that.
And I don't think that there's any really concern about that. Knock wood.
Not if.
But yeah, I think that as a Canadian.
Those are you.
As a me, I think I'm happy if he got back in, because I think to myself, that's probably a little bit more assurance politically in Canada than I want that assurance. It's like you leave a bad taste in people's mouths in large voting centers, which is not a bad thing.
And in typical form, he's going to be running in the next election, because what else is he going to do? He's not going to be running in Battle River Crowfoot.
I didn't know that until I saw your post about that. I was like, what? So for people listening, explain what's happening or not happening.
Okay, so when Mr. Poilievre lost his seat to Bruce Vanjoy, congratulations, Bruce, again, he was floating in the ethos trying to figure out what he was going to do. And so he required a seat in order to participate in Parliament as the leader of the Conservative Party of Canada. And when he looked far and wide, and somehow found Damien Couric out of Battle River Crowfoot, who had won his seat because Battle River Crowfoot. And somehow there was some sort of conversation
deal
that Damien would release his seat so that Pierre could run in a by-election in Battle River Crowfoot. It happened. It seemed much longer than it actually was. And he was successful in gaining his seat. He did videos driving around town on the back of a four-wheeler, going through the little towns and things like that. Like, he really made his presence known.
Yeah.
And it was a guaranteed seat. It's a Conservative stronghold. Nobody was surprised. But lo and behold, next time there's an election, he won't be returning to Battle River Crowfoot. I'm going to wager a guess that man has not stepped foot in any of that constituency since the election results came out. He just hasn't. And I get that's the game that you play,
sure.
But
there's
just
a bit of politics at play there, for sure.
It's a slap in the face.
It is not. If I was Battle River Crowfoot, I would feel a little bit jilted.
I think Battle River Crowfoot liked the celebrity of it. Like,
sure.
It's the leader of the party, right?
Yeah, it makes him feel important until he realizes he doesn't want to ever come back there.
He went, he saw, he won, he left.
He's like, that's enough.
Was it. Yeah, that's enough. He'll go to Calgary, where the convention is, but not Battle River Crowfoot.
The convention that's happening for the leadership review, of course, to vote, you actually have to be in the room in Calgary, I believe, which is crazy. And some of the Conservative Party members will be doing it. There's something that Doug Ford's doing at the same time for the Progressive Conservative Party.
Don't they have a convention?
I think they do.
At the same.
You really think of this being a politics podcast, I would know that kind of thing, but come on. Again, don't get your news from me.
Edit it out after the show. Exactly. And be like, yes, they are.
Yeah. Yes, they are, Mr. Black. But so that's going to, it'll be interesting to see who actually shows up at Calgary.
If I was a member of the Conservative Party of Canada, I'm going to have to wager what is most important, right? And if they're only allowing votes to happen for people present, that also hinders people being able to attend, right? Because not everybody can afford to fly from wherever they are.
Even
to
from
Calgary.
A time perspective.
Like, it's a dick move. So either it's happening because they want to guarantee that they have their diehards, right, who believe in the path that the CPC is taking and excluding anyone else who is a member of the CPC, which is shitty. But people are going to have to, hedge which is more important to them, right?
If he does get through, it'll be interesting because polls show, as we were saying, a massive gender and age gap. Polyev is plus 12 with voters under 30, which is shocking to me. I don't understand that.
I get it. It's that red pill bullshit.
It might be. But a staggering a negative 39 in Quebec. And I like the people always say deeply underwater now for polls. And I think it's a little, it sounds a little hyperbolic, but I'm going to go with it.
It just bubbles.
I'm going to run with it anyway. And deeply underwater with women minus 23. But there's some liberal strategists are apparently leaking that Carney might trigger a spring 2026 election to capitalize on Polyev's internal party friction before the trade war gets even uglier. I don't know if that's a good idea or not.
I don't want, no. Who wants to do that again?
Who wants to do it?
I get it from a strategic perspective. It buys you more time.
Yeah.
I maybe just think with everything going on, like maybe we don't invest our time and money into.
It'd be dumb. I think it'd be a dumb idea.
Right?
It becomes barefaced political.
It seems shady. So what I would like to see is that we don't do the spring election. Let whatever happens with the CPC happen with the CPC. Prove your worth. Mark, prove your worth.
Yeah.
And then the next election that happens when it's supposed to happen, you will have proven to Canada whatever you needed to do. I think sucker punching with an election to capitalize on instability, it makes things more unstable. I agree.
I'm total agreeance with you there. I think they should spend their time instead covertly giving Boston Pizza gift cards to conservative MPs who might cross the floor.
Come on over.
Exactly.
We have gift cards. I don't think they need gift cards. I think there's going to be more, depending on what happens at the end of this month with the leadership.
Yeah.
And the direction of whatever
that's true.
This convention decides that it wants to do in terms of its political stance. Because there was some... I even looked at Angus Reid's poll and it showed that he was down.
He gives gift cards, apparently.
I'm sure
you know
does.
That.
Yeah, I know. Because when I looked at it, this little screen popped up and I was like, I don't want you having my
information. You like Boston? You like Buffalo chicken pizza?
Thick crust, not that thin crust crap. There's some discussion about is the party too, have they gone too far? And we've talked about this for years, that there are conservatives that I don't believe fall in line with the direction of the party, and so hoping for a split, whatever. So I guess depending on how the party wants to direct its policy and its politics, I think that'll be the deciding factor for some of the current sitting MPs.
Because some of the current sitting MPs, conservative MPs, will think this is, we're not going in the direction I think we should go in.
I can't do it any longer. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And ultimately they represent their people, right?
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter if they decide to cross. At the end of the day, it's their people that will vote for them or not the next time. And if they're making a decision to move, they would have considered that.
It seems Polyev running again and just doing the leadership review and stuff, it's very much about vanity. It's about being prime minister.
I've said it before and I hate it about myself, but a teeny tiny part of me feels so badly for him.
I know, same.
Because this man from birth, it seems, that has been his goal, okay?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
He has worked, I'll use that loosely.
Sure.
He has found himself a seat and his entire adult career been in parliament. And to not achieve that goal and then to have to go in front of the camera, devastating to me. But I would also know when it was time to say, peace, I'm going to go do something else.
I think you'd be an amazing political pundit. I think you'd be an amazing political strategist. I think he's all politics. He's all game.
Yeah.
And no benefit, no societal benefit.
No impact.
But it's true. He's really good at the politics game, and he knows what he's doing. And that's, I think that's been his downfall, is the fact that he's realized, or early, as you said, he's wanted to be prime minister since he's been a kid.
Yeah,
I'm sure it certainly feels that way. But he's overlooked the fact that you can do good for people. And I think he thinks he's doing good for people, maybe. I don't know. I'm not buying it necessarily.
He could be a consultant. Yeah. He loves consultant.
Exactly. Be a great idea. So yeah, there's a lot of things happening, and we'll have lots to talk about for the foreseeable.
It's not slowing down, so don't you worry, folks.
It's not slowing down. Hey, listen, thanks for watching and or listening to Politics is Broken. You can find us on your favorite podcast platform or on YouTube. Or, this is exciting, I don't know if you're aware of this or not, Lisa, we're on the new Substack TV app, which I tested out right before recording, and you are on the big 65-inch screen in my living room, my family room, you and our heads. Both of our heads are up there. Yours was huge. Personal. Mine was life size.
Excellent. I like it that way.
But if you are a paid subscriber, you get to watch that on the Substack TV app, and you're sit down on the couch. You have a cozy up under a blanket. You don't have to even hold your laptop or your phone. You can just watch it on the big TV.
Turn it on and make breakfast.
Oh my God. Can you imagine? And if you're a paid subscriber, you get to do that without ads, which is great. And you get to watch the whole thing, which is awesome.
Excellent.
So we greatly appreciate the support. And if you're not subscribed, hey, why not subscribe? Come on.
It's cheaper than Starbucks.
It's cheaper than Starbucks. Exactly. Take care of yourselves. We'll see you next week.
Have a good week, everybody.
You've been listening to Politics is Broken with Brittle Star and Lisa B. Remember to like, follow, subscribe, and comment. And don't forget to check out BrittleStar.com for more.